maybe saying it's a sign of teething problems. It's actually the first, I think, almost the first official meeting that we are having. That's why then it's also coming with some logistical challenges. And of course, just to indicate as well that I just arrived last night. And I hope that the rest of yourselves have been informed about the challenges that I'm having. Last week, I think on Monday, I lost my mother, and we're burying only next weekend. So I've been busy with that, and so probably it also compounded to some of the logistical arrangement, but we're getting through. Welcome everybody. Like as we said last week on the elections of the chair, we did indicate that we really would like to work together towards one goal, committed and do our work efficiently. And today that is the start. Then let us contribute very positively. And let us be efficient, and let's finish the meeting in time when we have to finish in time. And whatever that may not be substantial, and then let us take cognizance of such and really put substance on the table and make sure that all of us, we discuss real substance of matters in front of ourselves and be a little bit efficient in the work that we are doing. With those few words, honorable members, I think you are all welcome in this meeting today of the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. I hope that all of us, I think we have received the copy of the agenda in front of us, but on that agenda, the first item on the election of the acting chairperson, I think it will fall away because I was not supposed to be here today, but because I found myself here, and then that item falls away, and then I've already dealt with item number two. Welcome all of you. And then I would humbly request that we go to item number three. And I hope that you may be having copies of the minutes. We will, in future, of course, make sure that you also receive the copy of the minutes either a day or two before the meeting. But luckily today, I think the minute is almost half a page. And it did not deal with many issues that are problematic. Then one would have loved us to spend a minute, just look at that set of minutes. And then after that, then I'll request whether there's anybody who moves for the adoption of the minutes as correct, or somebody that will raise their hand if there's a correction that requires to go on that. We will adopt an attitude that if everything goes well in any following meeting, then you must be able to adopt minutes of the previous meeting. You must not pile up minutes, because in the end, we end up losing track of what we discussed in the previous meeting. Can I give you 1 minute just to satisfy yourself on that half page? But during that 1 minute, if there's somebody who wants to correct something on those minutes, you can raise their hand straight away. Otherwise, you'll raise their hand and propose adoption. I'm starting to count the 60 seconds. Noted. Put the mic on. Okay, Honorable Rapuji has moved for the adoption of the minutes. Any seconder? Honorable Ness. Okay, Honorable Ness has seconded the adoption. Anybody who has got a problem with the adoption of the minutes?
Chairperson, sorry, I just think it's going to be I'm a bit small on your agenda. I just want you to just raise one matter that was that I recall raising in the meeting, and that was the issue about the visa regulations, where you had agreed that we can, the department can come and brief us on that. I don't see that in here.
Didn't we, at the end of that specific meeting, indicate that the department is actually called to come and give us a briefing of their work, and we expect that they will touch on the on that? And is that not captured? Because I thought that that is how we try to respond to that one, to say the department will be coming to brief us on the work of the department as we have agreed, and there's no way that they cannot brief us in relation to immigration issues, and then we'll be taking matters up at them. So if that is not captured, I think then it is let's hear Comrade Don.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. I think the honourable member should look at 3.1.
That's good.
And I think that is what the chairperson is saying. It's captured under 3.1.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't mean to have the discussion on this, but you are quite correct. But what you said is not captured here. I raised the request that the department should brief us on the new visa regulation. And your response to that was, well, when the department gets here, they will also brief us on that, because they are going to be briefing us on their work in the year ahead and all of that. So, but that's not captured here. So I would just ask that if you could maybe just capture and include the part of the visa regulations on the minutes, because that's, as I understand, how we left the meeting.
I think Honourable Member, I think it's as Honourable Gumede has indicated on 3.1, you should be finding comfort in that 3.1 if you read it correctly. If you read it correctly. Because one thing for sure is that the minutes cannot record debate and actual discussions. It must record exactly what we think is the way forward and is a resolution. And that actually captures what you were requesting. In total, if you read it properly, I think you should be understanding that. Can we move forward on that? Then, is there any further correction that we may need? None, and then that means the minutes are approved. And then, thank you for assisting me to dispose of the minutes. And then on the minutes, there is generally really nothing of matters arising until we get the department to brief us. Unless if there is a matter arising about the election of a chairperson, he wants to review that. otherwise, it's almost about the department briefing us, and from there then we should be able to move forward. Is it correct that I can take it in that light that we move to the next session of the agenda so that we get the actual substance that we have been deployed to come and do here? Okay. Then the minister is disposed.
May I address you? I think the state has said that may you move forward. I'm just rising to give you the permission to move forward. Please just leave yourself onto the chair. We'd like to be separate, and then we proceed.
Thank you very much for being so helpful. And then let me call the committee secretary just to take us on the budget process. I'm sure members will realize, like as we said last time, that we came in into this committee when a budget has been tabled, and then the department, the committee then must go through and pass the budget. So we are expected to hit the ground running. And those that have got the information that they've been here and then should actually help us to hit the ground running. And the committee secretary and the department itself then will come to the party to actually just do so, so that we don't start from way back. The committee secretary, you are called upon.
Good morning. My presentation will be very short, and then it will be specifically on the APP of the department. On slide number one, is that the executive authority is responsible for tabling of the strategic plan, which is like a 5-year plan, the annual performance plan, annual report in other documents to Parliament. Once these documents have been tabled in Parliament, then the Speaker will refer the documents to the relevant committee. In this case, it will be the Portfolio Committee on Home Affairs. And then it will appear on the ATC. This is called Announcements, Tablings, and Committee Reports. This ATC is available on a daily basis, so that no members and also staff and stakeholders are able to see what document has been referred to a particular committee. And then once an annual performance plan has been referred, or any particular document has been referred to the committee, then the committee needs to scrutinize that document and report to the National Assembly with recommendation. In this case, if it's the ABP, it would be to approve the budget or not to approve the budget. But we have never had a case where in the portfolio committee has not approved the budget in the past. So on slide number four, I said no, my presentation is going to be very short. The annual investment plan of Home Affairs was firstly referred to the portfolio committee in March, and then it was referred again on the 26th of June, and then there was an errata to the ATP, and I assume that members also received that errata to the ATP on the 26th of June. So currently, because of time constraint, we have got two meetings that are scheduled. One is today's meeting to listen to the department's APP, and then next week again, so that no, we process the budget of the department. Because on the 15th of July, Home Affairs is going to have their own extended public committee meeting, wherein the budget vote of the department is going to be debated. I think it's from 10 o'clock until 11:45 at Old Assembly Chamber. So I think that's briefly it. Yes, it's the 15th of July. So that's why if you look at the program, we did not, like in the previous year, include the entities, because we don't have time now, and I think we are the first committee that will be debating the budget vote on the 15th. So that's why we did not include the IEC to brief us on their APP. We did not include Film and Publication Board. We did not include government printing works because of the time constraint. But we did, when we wrote the letter to the minister, indicate that no, they can also just indicate the allocation to those entities, because they receive allocations through the Department of Home Affairs. So that's basically it. That's basically it. I think there are questions, and then I'll just check it. And then we have distributed this document.
Thank you very much. I do recognize that it has been a very brief report, and I'm sure it should be an economist. Yes, and but I mean, if there are questions of clarity, the issue is that the budget has been tabled, and then the government 80 seats referred to the committee. The committee needs now to consider, deliberate, and report on the matters and in the House for approval towards the adoption of the appropriation at the end. And I hope that there is a little bit of clarity, but if there is further clarity required, then if we can just raise them so that the committee secretary can clarify. Yes, Coach.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'm raising my hand to really get an understanding as to why would IEC not be part of the briefings to the committee in view of a very serious matter of national interest. In that regard, I would suggest that maybe Chairperson, as part of the committee decisions of today, we request the criteria to circulate the PDF copy of the judgment on Banzin Tlangula, Chairperson of the IEC, to all members, so that members should begin to acquaint themselves about what the judge said on IEC, Chairperson. And secondly, Chairperson, I would like to be, in a second or so, be taken on board, because maybe we will not hear some of us, on the matter relating to the public protector's report on the chairperson of the IEC. What was the decision of the portfolio committee in that regard? Just the decision, what was the decision of the portfolio committee on the matter of the public protector and chairperson of IEC? Yeah, thank you.
Okay. I think you may not be in a better position to respond to the issues that he is raising. The fact of the matter is that the committee can call any agency at any given time if you need that agency to come and brief us on the job that they are doing. As you can call any entity, you can call any person, and then I think the Constitution actually provides for us to be able to call people. But then when it comes to the matters that we have raised, I think we must wait for the appropriate time when the specific documents have been sent to Parliament. They will be referred to the committee if the committee has to take any particular decision on the documents. If the document has not been referred to Parliament, it has not been referred to the portfolio committee, there is very little that as a committee that we can do. But yourself individually, you can Google, you can do anything else, you can access information left and right and inform yourself. But I would say that let's wait for the document if it is referred to Parliament. We all know that there is an appeal, and there's nothing you can do when there is still that particular process. debate that as a committee, Mali has not been referred to us. So I think we must just enter, and we know that it is a fertile discussion for others, but I mean, we must just hold our horses a little bit. And then when the thing is completed, you'll find time to deliberate and resolve if we have to do anything about that. Can we do it that way? Thank you very much. Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. May I ask this question in a different way? The exclusion of entities, how does it impact on the process which we are undertaking now? I don't wish to delve into the issues that were discussed earlier, because I understand exactly what you were saying and why it was actually asked. But I'm just asking about the exclusion and the impact on the process that we are taking.
Like I indicated previously, the allocation to these entities is through the Department of Home Affairs. It's in one of the programs. So we've already requested the department to touch on those allocations. So there won't be any problems if we exclude them. But in future, when we've got time, it's because of the issue of time, when we've got time, we'll always include them, like we did in the past.
Chairperson. Yes. I hear what our secretary is basically saying, but that will be then the first time since 1994 that we passed the budgets of entities without interacting with them. And I'll feel rather uncomfortable with that, because the department cannot do anything more than informing us that they receive the money and then they channel it to those entities. That's all they can say. They can say nothing with regard to how that money is spent, how that money is planned, what needs to be done, etc. So it will put Parliament and this committee in a very difficult position when we come into the budget vote and we've got to approve a budget in terms of which huge amounts of money are being allocated to these entities without having interacted with them. I think we can't do that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think we all share the same feelings around some of these things. But having said that, I think the issue of budget, it has been done, it is complete. We cannot do anything to fix that now. The only thing could be to debate about that. And then, but that is not the only challenge. When we want to raise questions about the status, for instance, of IGC or any matter, I think there are other avenues in Parliament, like statements, motions, questions, and so forth. And now we are faced with 2 weeks, 2 meetings. This meeting, then next week, what will be the date next week? The 8th. And then the other week will be the 15th. We all wish that some of these things were discussed like yesterday. But looking at the practical side and the program, I think we cannot do as much as every one of us desires. That is my problem at this stage. One meeting left now. Thank you.
Chair, I agree with the principle that if this committee has to adopt a budget and a plan, that you're going to have the opportunity to be able to interrogate and discuss with the department on that plan and the budget. We're not going to be able to do that properly, although I recognize that time constraints is a problem. I completely understand. But why was it not possible for the entities to have been present with the department when the matter was being tabled?
Mm-hmm.
We can always do that. they are in our hands, and the department is briefing us today around 10:30, I think, and those entities have not been invited. So one will be pleading with all of you that let's allow the department to brief us, and if there is any report from the department about any entity that we are not happy about, we can always ask them that next week, before on the next meeting, next week, Tuesday or Wednesday, whichever is the date when we come and discuss now the briefing ourselves, we can ask the department to go back home and actually go and deal with particular matters and send the report next week to us, so that when we come in again now to finalize the report, then we will be having that particular input from the department about the entity, about that particular section that we worried about. That is, in a nutshell, what I would request us to do. Probably is next year. Next year we'll be having the budget being tabled around February. We will have all the time from February to June, debating all these things, and we will have an opportunity of doing things of more or less the correct and the most possible way. But at the moment, we are sitting on fire, actually. And one would request your support to this particular direction, so that we are able to complete this particular exercise. That's the matter.
Thank you, Tim. Listen, I understand what you're saying, and I realize the problem. I don't think anybody wants to delay the adoption of the budget. We cannot do that, and we all understand the program and the time frames, etc., all those things. But in the end, our task as Parliament and as a committee is to scrutinize what the department is doing and what the entities are basically doing. If we do not interact or find a basic way to interact, we will be recommending to Parliament and asking members to approve in the budget huge amounts of money without us even being able to say exactly what is happening and what it's all about. And I think that may be problematic. The colleague correctly pointed out that the budget has been introduced, but at some stage we must also have an interaction with regard to that situation, because the budget has been introduced by the executive. It's up to Parliament to decide whether we adopt the budget or whether we amend the budget. So that will happen in the future. So I'm trying to find a compromise or middle ground in terms of what can take us forward. Isn't it possible that we could ask those entities, they've got a week until next week, just to prepare a document giving us some indication of what they intend to do with the monies that are going to be allocated to them. They don't have to send the whole delegation. They could send one person to present that in 10 minutes to the committee next week. Then we can justifiably go to Parliament and say, we've interacted with the relevant entities and we can proceed with our work. We'll have our debate on the 15th. And to complete that. If you do not do it that way, you'll get into the debate and you'll be standing there and say, well, we've got to approve, we asked Parliament to approve so many billion for the IEC, but we've not interacted in any way with the IEC. The idea is not now to interact with the IEC in terms of maybe other issues. We are talking about the budget. So all I'm saying, isn't it possible to ask them that for a week to produce a document? They can send one person on behalf of that entity to take us through it next week in 10 minutes' time, and we can then justifiably go to Parliament and proceed in terms of the time frame.
Okay. I think what you have just asked, it does make sense, but it will make much more sense just after we have heard the department. We must hear the department, and we must recognize the deficiency and then take that particular. I think if we could give the researcher to tell us what the annual performance plan is talking about in the department, and then we await the department as well to come and do that, and then we will be in a better position to take that decision. I order. Thank you very much. Let's go, Rich.
Mr. President, I don't think it's a trans mesh whether the department or not. The issue here is a principle to say within the constraints that we have as a committee, it will be fair enough that even before the department comes. We take a decision that says on the 8th of July, when the department comes to either the department or the committee, as it sits on the 8th of July, the entities should be here to come and tell us what they intend to do with the budget, which we ordinarily have to recommend to Parliament. So let it be a principal decision now, before even the department comes, because as a member of said, we're speaking about IEC, an institution of national importance, preparing for the local government elections, and we need to allocate big billions even before the local government election comes.
Yeah.
So for that presentation, it's not a matter of a subject to the presentation of the department. It should not be subject to what the department is going to tell us. It should be saying the principal, the committee wants the entities to be here on Tuesday next week. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure maybe we are not making serious sense. We said that it is not, there is no problem, but you must identify the gap. When you just call them to come, then what is it that you want from them? If the department is able to present to us and then we say, this is what we need from them, then we ask that to come. But remember that next week as we're talking about this, that meeting is a meeting of the committee to deliberate on itself and produce a report. You don't have the whole day. You don't have the whole day. If we had the whole day, I mean, there's no problem of inviting IEC to come and entertain us, or the Phillips and Publications Board, or the government printing works. You can invite them to come and entertain us. But the problem is the time. Today we've got a presentation, and then the committee then must deliberate among themselves and finally produce the report that must go to the House. So I still try and repeat. You can have a whole day session with IEC at any time, even within after 3 weeks or 4 weeks when the budget is done. You can have that endlessly. But given the description you are giving to IEC as the people that must prepare for local government elections, when you call them here for 10 minutes, you are actually doing yourself a disservice. If it is true that it is an important entity, then you must allow a full 2 hours, 3 hours discussion with them and let them explain themselves how are they moving forward. And that is what we are saying. At the moment you don't have that time, let's complete the budget and then let's have these entities now come to us and then let them say what they want to say. Let us interrogate them. Let us get the hell out of them and be satisfied that we know what they are doing. And if there are things that we are not able to influence, and we can even have targets of them to report to us at a particular interval on matters that we think we need to follow it strictly. But I still plead this. If we allow the department to brief us on the APPs, let them brief us, let's hear what they are saying, and then let's pick up the gaps. Then we can instruct the department and say, we need this particular report from Phillips and Publications Board or from the government printing works by Monday next week. It should have been emailed to us. And then they go and work on that and email it to us. On Tuesday when we deliberate, we'll be having all these papers in front of us. And then that's what I'm pleading with committee members, because we need to make progress. We can't talk one and the same thing and then for ages.
If I may add, Dr. Moldos was saying that it's going to be the first time since 1994 that a budget will be recommended by a committee to the House when that department did not come with its entities. Is the statement valid? Because advise timing of the election date of the national elections this year. This is organization of certain caused by this election day is now becoming our agent.
Let us respond to you, Honorable. We generally, this is the fifth parliament. We can say 99% correct that this is our first official meeting. And therefore, that question that this will be the first time what happens, it may be an individual knowledge by virtue of either having been here longer than yourself. But one thing for sure what we are saying is the executive, the Minister of Finance has tabled the budget to Parliament. And then the Speaker has referred the budget to Finance. But the specific budget to the Department, but the portfolio committee is related to the Department. Now we have to actually do this. Now I'm saying it has been tabled in February. The elections came in between. Then you have got all of these other things happening. Now we come in today, new as we are, and then by the budget needs to be approved, we have got a very short period of time, hardly 2 weeks, and then for us to do that. Now I'm pleading, I'm saying is we have got an abnormal situation, which all of us must understand as members of parliament, representing the people out there. That we've got an abnormal situation that we must comply with in terms of time, and then, but that doesn't mean that we can't do our work. We're still going to do your work for the remaining time that's coming, even up to the next budget. That will give you almost all about 3 months or whatever to consider the budget. This time the elections have stolen time out of that. Because it has not adjusted the periods of the budget for to be available and to be approved by Parliament. It has not adjusted that. It has just stolen the time that you require to do that. Can you move forward on this specific item, Honourable Members? Yes. Okay. I really please that we move forward with one of this and get off this particular item and get the presentations. And then we'll take off from the presentation that we'll get.
Yeah. I'm sorry, with respect, may I just say this? And that is, I think there's a principle involved here that's the point you're missing. You don't approve a budget and then engage the department and ask what are you doing with the money. It's the other way around, actually. And that's the principle that I think that is being expressed here. And there is a compromise.
Should I just request you to not proceed, because we are not saying that we are not listening to the department. Here we are having discussions on entities reporting to the department.
I understand.
And the department that is responsible for those entities.
I understand.
So I just request that do not say that we want to approve a budget without talking to the department. So that's the department that you are requesting to present.
Perhaps the correct word is
yes.
Entity. Perhaps the correct word is entity. But there is a compromise which I think is a workable one. And my honourable colleague has suggested that all it requires is for the department to put a document on the table by next week to say this is what's going to happen. And then the principle of engagement with the entities would have been satisfied and we can achieve exactly what it is that you want. And I think that's a win-win situation. You can achieve both things, and then we would have satisfied ourselves that there was some level of discussion or interaction with the department, with the entities, not the department, before then we are asked to say, do you support this budget or not?
But you see, that particular suggestion that was raised by the Honourable Member that signed, when we responded, he understood and he agrees. Unless otherwise we are just simply not listening to each other when we are speaking. Because if you listen carefully to his proposal and when you responded to it and he actually agreed that we are having this abnormal situation. But then I said to him, he agreed that when I said, let's have the department to report then let's pick up on the things that we'll ask the entities to send to us by next week when we discuss. And then he actually agreed. But then the other members then still stick to the previous position of his proposal. I think it will be very important. Maybe it's not nice for me to call to members to listen carefully because it's denigrating. But I think it will be very important to listen very carefully how people structure proposals, because one little word, if it is clarified, it changes everything. So if we can do that, we should be able to move forward. Can we move forward? Should we move forward, Honorable Nancy?
Yes, I want to move forward, but I'm not sure whether the members can be here. In particular, because the reason why I'm not here, when the department is coming to present, the GC or whoever I hear is going to present, and then when there are issues that need to be clarified, it would be the head that would be going to the GC to have to be clarified. If you want to call them entities, I want you to speak down here, but I care for another. Now, what is related to them as a new case or an attempt that that's what they are studying is the process that's going to happen.
Thank you. Thank you very much, and I hope that as we move forward, I think the processes will unfold and we'll know the processes, how these things continue. And it's not a train smash. Can you call the researcher then to take us on item number 6?
Thank you.
We are all yours.
Thank you, Chairperson. In the interest of the time, the bus is already waiting for us outside. So I've given you two documents. The one on the budget analysis I gave you at our first meeting, or I submitted before the first meeting. In the interest of time, I'm just going to move straight to the questions section. And basically, this analysis is generated over having observed several budgets over the fourth parliament and doing an analysis and a comparison from previous years. And the questions that arise here are the main issues that were recommended from the fourth parliament in terms of the budget review and recommendation process, and through that engagement with the department and its entities throughout the past couple of years. So the issues that kind of stand out, first of all, if you look on the second page, there's actually just a summary of the budget in a diagram over there, which shows you where there have been increases and decreases, how the budget of the department is comprised of. You have the central sphere there, which is the total budget of the department, and then the three main spheres, the smallest of which is immigration, then second is administration, and the third is the civic service, is the main function of the department, and the various subcomponents of that are represented there. It's clearer in the version that I emailed you, which is also color-coded. Suffice to say, if you just move to the questions section on the last page there, the questions that arose were, the department's budget is stated in terms of the 12 outcomes, as well as mentioning the national development priorities. So the 12 outcomes have been around for a number of years, and they've actually increased to 14 now. So the question is basically what guidance or what their orientation is in terms of making sure that the NDP and these 12 government outcomes work together. Secondly, the corporate services sub-program within administration is a significant reduction allocation going to receive a significant reduction in its allocation. And will the DHA be able to improve targeted performance in services delivery despite these reductions? Because corporate services basically deals with ensuring that the planning is done sufficiently in the department and they receive a budget reduction. Thirdly, what form does the self-financing of funds take relates to the issuing of enabling documents, and how were issues related to this in past years addressed? So basically the department is now financing its own documents through its own budget, basically through selling its documents. And the question is, how are they going to address this issue going forward? Fourthly, is the DHA confident that the government printing works will be able to finance its own expenditure over the medium term? And this is because the government printing works with print our smart IDs and all. improve drastically in terms of making sure that its expenditure is distributed evenly throughout the year, but they're still consistently underspending by 2 or 3% each quarter. So the question is, how are they going to address that? What are the changes, seventh, that are needed to ensure, okay, that's what I've done already, eighth, what impact is anticipated will the reduction of overall budget have on the implementation of services in provinces? So all government departments across the government have received a reduction in budgets, and particularly in the immigration program of the department. So the question is, how are they going to manage that in terms of provincial service delivery? And then ninth, what extent of live capture and biometric scanning being implemented in offices around the country and for ports of entry? So the big part of the government's or the Department of Home Affairs' new security features is being able to use fingerprint scanners. And so the question is, how many of the its offices have been implemented, have had biometrics introduced, and how many are still outstanding? And then lastly, what's the impact of the reduction in the and name change have had on the IT modernization project? So the IT modernization project has changed from Who Am I Online to IT modernization. And the question is, if the continuity in that big IT project, and although it's a significant amount of budget, it has received reduction in budget, and the question is, if it's going to impact on the service of the department. So that's just briefly some of the main issues arising out of the budget analysis. If we then move to the second document that I distributed, which is the annual performance plan of the department. The main thing there, just kind of goes into more detail from in terms of what Eddie was raising, in terms of the process for what the department should do. Basically, that the Treasury framework states that the department needs to publish an annual strategic plan every 5 years, and then an annual performance plan to provide more detail in each financial year to give more bones, meat to the bones of the strategic plan. And they also need to publish their documents online. And then you'll see on page 2, it's basically just a diagram of the ideal process. Obviously now we've already discussed that the process is a bit out of sync for this year, but that basically every 5 years you need, usually between election years, you have a strategic plan, and then you have annual performance plans focusing on the first year, but then also detailing the outer years, and you bring those out every year. And then in addition to that, there's quarterly and monthly financial reports, which the departments, which Parliament can access, and then the annual reports come later in the year. And the main intervention for Parliament is basically at the budget review and recommendation reports, where the Parliament recommends what needs to be done in the prior year's budget. But as was mentioned, the budgets and annual performance plans have already been tabled. But the real intervention for Parliament comes the year before, towards the end of the year, when the medium-term budget is tabled, and Parliament gives its input there prior to the plans even being made. So Parliament has interacted with the entities and Department at an earlier stage, which has in fact already inputted into their current plans and budget. A main issue that if you look at the plans of the department for the past 5 years, there's some the main issue that's kind of emerged is that there's not a strict adherence to the process that needs to be followed. So the last time the department actually tabled a document called the strategic plan was in 2011, and since then they've been tabling annual performance plans, but it varies in terms of whether it's 3 years or 5 years or 7 years. And and the objectives, if you look at the little table at the bottom of page 2 there, there's quite a degree of variation in terms of how many strategic objectives there are and how many targets and indicators there are and how many years are covered by the document. So they ideally need to have a 1 5-year plan and then every year update an annual performance plan, and they haven't been doing that. So the main questioning, if you can go to the last page in the interest of time, the question section is why the department hasn't brought out a 5-year strategic plan and a separate annual performance plan. They usually have some kind of combination of the two in one document. And then lastly, when they're doing plan in because they've had a lot of fluctuation in targets and strategic objectives over the years. So it's better in terms of reporting and service delivery and monitoring and evaluation to make sure that they have a fixed document for a lengthy period of time, which only changes in a minor way in each given year. So better fixed monitoring and evaluation and also service delivery monitoring better. Also, in terms of question three, there a lot of their targets are new. So of the 35 targets set in the current annual performance plan, 25 does not exist in 2011. So the question is how they are going to ensure continuity and monitoring when their targets are constantly changing. Then fourth, what measures have been implemented or planned to ensure that the achievement rate set against targets improves without dropping standards? So they obviously have budget, the department has budget limitations like all government departments, but they also have historically a very low performance rate in terms of they have achieved between 25 and 26% of their targets fully. So they've got a low performance rate, and given that and budget shortages, the question is how they're going to improve on that in the future. And then there are two new government priorities which have been introduced from this year, and the question on there, number five, is how is it going to include a decent employment through inclusive economic growth, which is the fourth government priority, which is part of the new 2014 to 2019 government priorities. And then question six there, government priority 14, which is also new, which is the nation building and social cohesion. The department includes that in its plans, but doesn't specifically say how its plans contribute to nation building and social cohesion, but also not how its plans will address xenophobia. So xenophobic attacks have been a historical problem that obviously has a negative impact on social cohesion and sense of identity in the country. So the question is how are they going to deal with that in the future, if at all. And then question seven is on the fact that the Department of Home Affairs is now including both the justice and government departmental clusters, so the JCPS and the government and administration, government department clusters. Home Affairs forms both of those. And so the question is how they're going to balance security considerations with service delivery and human rights considerations and the other. So they have these competing issues. And then question eight on staff morale. Given the continued restrictions in the growth of the department's workforce and also of its delays in its recruitment, so the question is how are they going to deal with staff morale given the increased workload and limited staff capacity. And then ninth, the department mentioned that they were going to decentralize in order to cope with some of the additional workload. And the question is what posts are going to be decentralized and at what level. And then the question 10 there was that the department has been planning a migration policy for a number of years, and in each annual performance plan they seem to be postponing the finalization of that migration policy. So the question is when that process is going to be finalized, because it's quite important in terms of the country's development and also in terms of the state of the nation address priorities. And then lastly, the department seems to have stopped publishing its annual reports and plans on its website, and the question is why they've done that when the framework actually suggests that they do. So I do rush it through, but I just wanted to give you an idea of some of the issues that are emerging out of the two. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the presentation that you have made, and I think it should be able to capacitate many of us when we look at the presentation of the department itself. I think it should be empowering. And honorable members, I think what we planned was that after this briefing by the committee researcher, we planned for a tea break after it, so that we get the department to come in, then circle and prepare to actually brief us on their APP and the budget. Can we do so and have a 10 minute let's pray for tea, so that we allow the department to come in and take us on. Okay, this meeting is temporarily adjourned for tea. 15 minutes will tell you that the meeting has resumed. I think it should be just outside. I'll deal with that just after the meeting. Let's have that engagement after the meeting.
PMG's email address.
Email.
Okay.
Honorable members, welcome back. And then we continue with the meeting that was already started early this morning. I think you will realize that we were just having some administrative activity, because I thought that we have got four members from the department to come and brief us. And all of a sudden I realized that we have closed the head office. So, but then I now wanted to have the names of the members from the department who are with us today. And the delegation that's coming to brief us from the Department of Home Affairs is led by the Director General, Kuseli Aplen, then the Chief Operations Officer, Tulan Mavuso, supposed to be here, the DDG for Civic Services, Vusum Kize, then we've got the DDG for Human Resources, Avril Williamson, and Dr. Carnason. Then we have got the Chief Director for Inspectorate, Maureen Matthews. Then Chief Director for Finance, Josephine Mayer. And then the Deputy Director, Parliamentary Liaison, Riaz Musa. Then we have got Sam Mandiwan, is a PLO, and Adre Gam, PLO. This is the delegation that is going to talk to us on what the department plans to do and the financial allocations to actually make the plan deliver services to our people. Honorable members, they are presenting to us, as I've indicated in the morning. After they have presented, we will be asking questions for them to clarify the issues that we are not clear, so that when we come and deliberate among ourselves, we must be having clarity on the issues that they have presented to us. On that score, I would request the head of the delegation of the Department of Home Affairs to take us on, whether it's himself or a delegate from himself, but the department to take us on. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members. My name, I'm Kuseli Aplen, the DG of the Department of Home Affairs. As the other members have already been introduced, I'm not going to repeat that. We are here, Honorable Members, to brief you on the plans for the department for the 14-15 financial year. I've just
introduced the names. If we could attach the names to the bodies, so that the members can see. If it can just, maybe can just know who is.
Give them 2 minutes for them to do that, so to learn into position.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, my name is Tulane Mavuso. I'm the Chief Operations Officer in the Department of Home Affairs.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Vusum Kize, Deputy Director General for Saving Services.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Mudiri Matthews. I'm the Chief Director of Immigration Inspection.
Good morning. My name is Gabriel Majuana. I'm a Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Department.
Good morning, Chairperson and Honorable Members. My name is Avril Williamson. I'm the Deputy Director General for Human Resources. Thanks.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'm Josephine Maria. I'm Chief Director for Finance.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. I'm John Carnison, Chief Director for Policy Planning and Reporting.
Good morning, Honorable Members. Chairperson and members of the committee. My name is Riaz Musa and I'm a deputy director responsible for parliamentary liaison.
Chair, for that
opportunity. I'll be taking the committee quickly, trying just to give what is the mandate and the role of the Department of Home Affairs, what is our vision and mission and values, what commitments we have in support of government outcomes, what has been the transformation phases and significant achievements, and the human resource strategy, because the Department of Home Affairs is a service department, and then what is our contribution to the National Development Plan and the medium-term strategic framework of government, what are our key challenges and strategic initiatives to address those challenges, and the modernization program which as a department has embarked on in terms of change how we work, and what are the DHA outcomes and strategic objectives which are in the annual performance plan. I might not go there into detail. And what is our organizational model and the footprint of the department? So, Home Affairs, as I said, is a new department. We've got two major mandates which we have. Is a civics mandate. The DHA is a custodian and a protector and the verifier of the identity and status of citizens and permanent residents in South Africa. This includes issuing travel documents that are recognized by other countries. In terms of immigration, the DHA controls, regulates, and facilitates immigration and the movement of persons through ports of entry. It also serves foreign missions, enforces the Immigration Act, and determines the status of asylum seekers and refugees in accordance with the international obligations. I'll come back in terms of how we are structured to deal with those. However, we've got other mandates as a department in terms of funding and oversight of electoral independent electoral commission, which is IEC, but is a Chapter 9 institution that is important, government printing works and the films and publication board. We're also responsible for the administration of Public Holidays Act and the funding of the political parties through the IEC. That, in a nutshell, is the responsibilities of the department. Where do we derive our mandate? Is from the Constitution. The right to citizenship and thus to secure identity and civic status. The responsibility of the state and citizen to ensure sovereignty, security, and integrity of South Africa. And the need to honor international commitments as a responsible member of the community of nations and as part of ensuring peace and a better life for all. In terms of the legislation, we've got the Civic Acts, which is Births and Deaths Registration Act of 1992, Identification Act of 1997, South African Citizenship Act of 1995, Civil Union Act of 2006, Marriage Act of 1961, Registration of Customary Marriage Act of 1998. In terms of the Immigration Acts, we've got two, Immigration Act of 2002, and as well as the Refugee Act of 1998. In terms of the international instruments, we have conventions and protocols, mainly relating to asylum seekers and refugees, which those are Geneva Convention of the UN, AU, and SADC protocols. And we also have bilateral and multilateral agreements mainly relating to immigration matters. So it is important for us just to say, what is the value chain of the civics? We say, yes, civics is a little bit stable by now, and it's a basic right for all citizens. But critical systems and data are under constant threat from fraud, errors, cyber attacks and identity theft, so it's still remaining a challenge. But going forward, we are looking, which I'll come back, to a national identity system. But currently, it's important to understand that we split. We've got what we call the National Population Register, and then we've got, call it NPR and HANIS. But the NPR is really secured by early registration of birth. I want to come back to this issue and say we want to emphasize that the birth must happen within 30 days. And then we have to say just status changes, that is issuing IDs, marriage, deaths, and amendments, and we must say just citizenship changes and naturalization.
then HANIS keeps, it means now the NPR is keeping your biodata, but now the HANIS is keeping now your biometric data, which is now your fingerprint and a photo. So currently we've got separate systems, that has got its own challenges, but when I come now to the priorities of the going forward to resolve those issues. Then in terms of immigration, well, immigration is really a dynamic field. They must be able to counter threats, into crime, terrorism, and ensure the efficient and strategic facilitation of legal immigration. And then in terms of that, as I've said, that we operated in an international space where through our foreign missions, I'll still come back to that, relations with other countries, and we've got hubs in certain regions where we process people before they come to the country. And then you come now at a border level. At a border, we have ports of entry, and then we've got a border line. In that, we are operating mainly two systems, electronic movement control systems and an advanced passenger processing system. Then at a domestic level, we have to enforce these acts and we have to compete for skills, protect the refugees, and we're using a national identification system. So even there, you can see that we've got various systems. But all that, we need to do it in a risk-based and intelligence and dependent and strategic issues. Well, trying to unpack now, what is the vision of a transformed Department of Home Affairs? At the heart of transformation is building a cadre of officials that is patriotic, disciplined, security conscious, professional and humane. As I've said, that the Department of Home Affairs interfaces with everybody in the country. In fact, simply put, we are saying that we deal with a human being from the cradle up to the death, and at times even beyond the death. If someone's identity, even if you are on your grave, it can only be confirmed by the Department of Home Affairs. Before we take the boat down, we have to take one, the last one, to take that fingerprint. Then modernization of systems through digital technology and integration is a critical enabler of security, service delivery, and transformation. I've already mentioned how many systems do we have, but if they are not integrated, that would be a problem for us. And want to move out of a paper environment. The primary objective of DSA is really to secure identity and immigration and deliver related services that support the achievement of national goals, as I will come back to the NDP and MTSF, including security goals and efficient service delivery to all citizens and residents. The DSA must have the capacity to secure critical systems and related services by managing risks in terms of legislation, staffing, systems, culture, and organization. The department needs to be fully integrated into the security cluster. I will come back on the slide on that. While continuing to develop its relationships with a wide range of states, civil society, and international stakeholders and partners. Hence, we are saying the DSA must operate as a security department that delivers critical services. In that sense, this is not going to take much, but I'm saying if you look at the center, the green part with the DOE is a Department of Education, DOH, Department of Health, DST, Department of Science and Technology, DSA, Home Affairs, DTI, and Social Services. These departments are classified as a non-security department, but any security breach in these departments affect the departments on the outer circle. Just to demonstrate that, if somebody comes from a neighboring state and gets into the country with fraudulent documents, that person ends up in the social development and getting the pensions. And then, because now the Home Affairs in that process was a missing link, or even if a person goes to the Department of Health, so that's why I was saying now, the Justice Department protects state functions, society, citizens, and residents. Hence, it was saying that the protection at the top and the protection of identity and status of all who live in South Africa and as a citizen abroad is our responsibility. Enable security interaction with global community in respect of international migration. Hence, we're saying the status of the DHA impacts on and enables the security of all elements of the nation and the state. So if you look now, what are the responsibilities of SARS, state security agents, SNTF, SACS, justice and correctional services, then we're saying Home Affairs needs to move up to the outer layer if now we are saying we are the key element of the security architecture of the state. So in terms of our vision and mission, we're saying vision is a safe, secure South Africa where all of its people are proud of and value their identity and citizenship. So when we deal with the situations where people get into the marriages of convenience just to sell our ID, so we still need to work on those kind of issues. Then our mission is the efficient determination and safeguarding of the identity and status of citizens and the regulation of immigration to ensure security but promoting development and fulfill our international obligations. As a DHA, we're saying our values is people-centered and caring, patriotic, professional and having integrity, corruption-free and ethical, efficient and innovative. That's why we're talking about this IT modernization, disciplined and security consciousness. So in terms of government outcomes, there are 14 national outcomes, but as a department, we are contributing more on the 5. All people in South Africa are and feel safe. Decent employment through inclusive economic growth. A skilled and capable workforce to support an inclusive growth path with our immigration laws. An efficient, effective, and development-oriented public service. I will come back how we are to do that. Nation building and social cohesion. Well, just to share with the committee what has been the agreement which was signed in the previous administration for the Department of Home Affairs. It was the completion of all strategic information and identification projects within already defined budgets and timeframes. I'll touch a little bit what we have done. Effective and efficient refugee management strategies and systems. Contributing to the level of skills and general economic development in South Africa by realizing a positive skills migration trend of around 50,000 migrants, the registration of every childbirth within 30 days of delivery, and issuing of identity documents to every South African 16 years and above. But we'll come back on this when we are bringing our annual report of the 2013-14 financial year. But a little bit, I'll just touch on that. So we felt that it's important just to map out what has been the key phases of transformation in the department. In 1994 to 2004, we were really one de-regionalized department level components. Service delivery was the only focus of the department. Compliance rather than risk-based security, especially in immigration. Relative little capacity building or transformation within the department. In the 2004 to 2009 era, yes, there was still crisis related to poor management, finance and services, low public confidence, were issuing an ID at 180 days, and there was a lot of corruption. Then we had the support intervention team in the department. There's a lot of legislative review which started in that process, and the turnaround launch was launched. Major successes boost public confidence. At least in that era, we're able to make other products a little bit quicker. Though we still said there was a less progress made with regards to immigration and support functions and systems, there was still a less focus on the security role of DHA. In the last administration, there was really a paradigm shift to DHA as a key element of security, because we moved from the GNA cluster to the JCPS cluster as a department. And really 2010 was a key milestone for us during the World Cup, and we launched of a major national registration campaign in 2010, and the stakeholder forums which are assisting us in the communities to deal with the issues of Home Affairs. We introduced a new operation model which I'll come into at the end. And really the major focus was really now on the key areas of immigration. Those are still challenges. And we started to launch a system of modernization project. So I'm talking with the smart card. And we started to lead the process of establishing the border management agency and renewed focus on recruitment and training. Well, just in a snapshot, what has been just a few of the achievements we can put here is to say, we were able now with this registration of children within 30 days that in the current past financial year, 650,682 births were registered within 30 days as against a target of 642,000. But in terms of statistics South Africa, we estimate that we've got 1 million births in a financial year, but we're still, this is about 1.1, 1.2. So we're still not where we want to be. So it's something we just still need to push. But we do this through the operation of online birth registration facilities at 44 additional health institutions, giving us a total number now of 391 health facilities throughout the country which has got an online birth. But we still got challenges because now parents still leave the hospitals without registering their children. And then we launched 8 additional stakeholder forums, which gives now 264 in all the municipalities. We started awareness initiatives and outreach programs in rural areas, schools, farms, and informal settlements, but we still have got challenges in the farming sector. And then we have issued about 125,000 smart cards as against a target of 100,000, which made possible through the rollout of life capture functionality for IDs and passport at 70 offices. But what is key about this change, I was saying that in the past we issued an ID over 180 days, we reduced it now to 54 days. Now with the smart card, we're at a range of 7 days. But you can get your smart card, it gets printed immediately, you've applied for it, because it's electronic, but it's just the process of the courier service to send it back to you. Well, there was a new strategy for late registration of birth that was adopted, and amended regulations in terms of birth and death registration act was signed into effect on 20 February 2014. Maybe in another meeting we'll press the committee in detail what were those amendments. With regard to immigration, there was a major focus on the strengthening of the designated ports of entry. Infrastructure improvements were completed at 11 ports of entry, in particular if you take our Bate Bridge. And then the movement control system was extended to additional 13 ports of entry. We have now finalized the use and technical specification for Trusted Traveler program. What we mean by this term is that if you take our neighboring states like Lesotho, we are checking their passport on a daily basis. But with the Trusted Traveler program, we'll be using a fingerprint and you just go through and then it opens through your gate. So it will facilitate that movement, but in a secured manner. And I'm sure there's a lot of progress being made with the establishment of the border management agents, which has to deal with the issue of the porousness of our borders. And then where we have now just in May opened a port of entry control center at Cape Town Harbor, where all departments are working together to really improve the security and efficiency. Travelers were efficiently and safely processed during the state funeral and as well as African Nations Cup and the 2013-14 December festive. So we amended the immigration regulations which were approved and get Act implemented. So now we're dealing with the challenges of implementation, but it was approved in the previous financial year. So in terms of the human resource strategy, I would not go into detail because of the list, but what I have to say, we as a department was one of the issues we have to look at. It was when we were trying to analyze how can we improve the services in the Department of Home Affairs. So we realized that I can have the machines, I can have a modernization, I can have a proper legislation, but if we don't work on the issues of people in the Department of Home Affairs, we won't go anywhere. So that's where we are really putting a real attention on it. I will show now in another slide that what level we are in terms of resourcing the department, but what we are talking about here is the caliber of that official. We standing in front of the customer must know how to deal with that customer, must understand properly our laws and all that. So, Chair, that's why we are looking at the issue of the human resource development. And then performance management. Yes, Chair, as government, we've got the what to call this performance management system. But with our IT modernization, it's looking to help us. Because, Chair, I can be able to give you and say one machine in the Department of Home Affairs in a day, it must be able to produce 21 cards. That is the target. And now that on a daily basis, I know that a machine one in office B has only done 3 cards, whereas office C has managed to do 20 cards. So I'm able to manage. So now staff are beginning now to be clear with our targets. It's not based on something which you cannot be able to evaluate at the end of the day. So it's something which we are implementing in that department. Issue of the employee relations strategy. Chair, we know that for us, we are working in partnership with labor. So we want to improve our employee relations. So we work together on whatever we are changing in the department. But primarily, we want to drive the issue of zero tolerance to corruption and ill discipline. So with our partner, we have agreed on that issue, that if somebody is involved in that, gets charged, dismissed. Well, the issue of the organizational transformation, I say, yes, we are people, but the department has now to also now adapt in that environment. So it's something we say we are looking at. So we are really focusing in terms of change management and modernization. So we want to see a day where people are able to access our services, not to come physically into the offices of Home Affairs, except for the basis of taking your photo or a fingerprint. And that will improve the turnaround of our products. People acquisitions, Chair, has indicated that we is something which we work very hard on it. One of the principles which we took in the department said, as with the limited resources which we have, but the emphasis should be that at a management level, we must be able to fill those positions. Because as a manager, I will be able to improvise if I've got staff shortages here and there. But if we appoint only the lower level, then you end up not able to control issues. So it is still a challenge, but it's something which we are working hard on it. So this slide just gives us where we are. If you look at the first one, headcount, we're just saying there's about 2010-11, we had 9,259, but that number at that level was more inclusive of the contract workers, which now we stopped that in the Department of Home Affairs. We no longer have contract workers. So now the numbers which we have is permanently staff. So now we're at a bracket of about 9.664. So we are approaching now a 10,000 bracket by end of the 2014-15. But with that, at management level, we're at 103 in the 2010-11, now we're at a level of 170 senior management, that is directors up. Well, we had the challenges of vacancy rate, but for now we're at 6.6%. Well, in the 2010, that high turnover rate was really due on us also releasing contract workers where we did not have funding for, but now it is improving now in the department. People are staying in the Department of Home Affairs, which we really see that as a positive issue for us. But the other one is on the gender and SMS, but I will come at that level. Yes, we are not achieving the 50%, but we're striving towards that. Now we're at 46%, and the issue of disability is still a challenge, but now we're at 1.36% as against 2%. Then this just gives now in terms of what positions which we have in the 13-14, we had 1,711 posts to be filled. We managed to fill 1,205, and we still remain with the 506. This is also due to people who are also resigning within the year. It's not that those people, we've got posts at the beginning, and people, they also resign, and we still have to fill those positions. But what is important in this light is just to say, as a department, we are mindful of the equity issues, to say that total number of 9664, we are saying 86.58 is filled by the Africans as against the national demographic of 79%. And then with the colors, we're at 5.75 as against 8.9%. And with the Indians, we're at 0.82 as against 2.5%. And then whites, we're at 6.85 as against 9.6%. So it's something which we are looking at it to move to get the demographics properly in the department. But on the bottom part, we're saying now, with that number, as I said, that now at SMS at 170, and another staff now is 9494, but on that, 40.56% is male females, and 59.44% is females. But where it is critical, is at the SMS level. For now, we're at 54.12% males, and 45.88% females, as against the 50% target. So it's something which we are mindful as a department. We are still working hard on it. So we are short about 4.32% to meet the target. Well, sir, this is what we say. What are the priorities of government in terms of State of Nation Address, National Development Plan, and role of DSA? But in the following slides, we have explained in detail. So, say the mandate of department is in broad, in alignment with the NDP. The inclusion of all citizens in democracy and development is enabled by providing them with a status and an identity that gives them access to rights and services in the country. Improvements of the efficiency and security of systems of DSA, as in the case of IDs, have assisted in poor and reduced corruption. There's also been a major drive by DSA, especially in rural areas, to ensure early registration of birth and inclusion of all citizens in the NPR. So DSA is putting in place the policy, legislation, people and systems needed for the secure, efficient and strategic management of immigration. One of the pillars of the NDP is the building of a capable state that can play a decisive role in the development and reduction of poverty. So this has embarked on a large-scale modernization program that will enable the state to deliver services more efficiently and securely. That's why we talk about the smart card, but on the immigration side, we're talking about these visa facilitation centers, so that we can be able to improve our efficiency. So this system will really be able to produce reliable statistics for planning processes. Social cohesion and nation building is promoted through providing the same services to all citizens and residents by means of over 400 offices and through involving communities in government using structures as stakeholder forums. in terms of the inclusive economic growth, which is a top priority, there is a need for immigration and refugee policies, legislation and system process which address national priorities and maximize benefits and reduce risk to the country. The DSA can ensure the secure, effective and efficient mass transit of people and goods across land, sea, air borders to contribute towards the security and development of South Africa. So, Chair, the efficient and secure ports of entry reduce the cost of doing business, encouraging trade, and enable regional development. In this regard, Chair, the legislation now has been passed for one-stop border post at Limpopo, which now we are busy implementing that. And we think that this one of the main goals will be the establishment of this border management agency. I've already talked about the issue of the modernization program, but I think it's important for us that the focus will also be placed on trade representation and diplomatic presence in fast-growing markets, as well as implementation of focused regional integration strategy with an emphasis of reducing the red tape. Well, so in terms of the MTSF, there are three areas where the department has to contribute. As a border effectively defended, protected, secured, and well managed, so the integrated BMA established and operational by December 2016, will have to develop an overarching strategy to defend, protect, secure, and ensure well managed borders. In terms of identity of all persons in South Africa known and secured, said that is very important. That's why we are saying now, if South Africans go and apply for an identity document, they don't send anybody. They come in person so that we can be able to take your fingerprint and your photo. It's the same chair with the foreign national. To say, if you want to apply for a permit, come in person so that I can be able to take your fingerprint and your photo, so that we are able to know who is this person who is in our country. In the past, we were not having that, and this is a really, really, really a security issue. So that's one of the issues which is really like causing problems now for us with the new immigration regulations, but it's exactly to do that. And we have to ensure that registration at birth is the only entry point for South Africa to the new national identity system. And then we are designing that system must be designed and operational. What is going to be a difference? Now, you remember I said in the previous one where the NPR, where the harness, and where the needs for the foreign nationals. Now, this new national identity system is going to combine all that into one. And so that systems are in place to enable the capturing of biometric data for all travelers who enter or exit SA legally. So that is going to be a challenge, but we have to do it. We are building our system that anyone who comes into the country will take the fingerprint and will take the photo. When you exist, we'll take the fingerprint so that chair. If we are faced with the situation of people who come to our country not to support what we are doing, we must be able, as a Department of Home Affairs, to provide that information about who is this person. And then improve and streamline regulations to reduce the burden of importing core and critical skills needed for the economy. Changes to immigration policy and legislation supports the importation of economically important skills. Say with even just our amendment says now, if you are really critical skill, we'll give you a permit, whether you've got a job or not, for a period of about 6 months. But if you are a skill, well, there's a difference between a critical skill and a scarce skill. A scarce skill is a maths teacher, but it does not mean that South Africa does not have maths teachers. It does. Hence, now we'll want in that event that you must show to us that you did advertise that position, you could not get a South African with that skill, and then you are allowed then to bring that skill. But the critical skill is a welder, which in South Africa we might not have those welders at that. level. So in that case, I will give you a permit up front. So what are the key challenges remaining in the Department of Home Affairs? So the issue of the asylum seeker and refugee management is still a challenge in the department. We are amongst the highest countries which receive the asylum seekers. And we are still working on the location of our refugee centers to the borderline. And that's also the reason to say people are coming through our borders. We don't want them to settle in our country without any document because they're looking for a refugee center which is inside deep into the country. But if we deal with them next to the border, so that those who qualify must come into the country, those who do not must be returned. We still have to overhaul the permitting system and the border management. There's still dependence into our Department of Public Works and CETA with regard to office infrastructure and the networks. Because for us now, as we're moving out of the paper environment to paperless, so the issue of the broadbanding satellite is an issue. The matter of line integration of IT systems, as I spoke about, records management, that our records are still on paper. We need, as we digitize, as Home Affairs, we're currently having over 160 million records, if you can think about when Home Affairs was in place. So now we're keeping the records of all those people. So we still have to convert those documents. We still have got areas where we lack capacity. In particular, now with these new regulations we are bringing it, we need to look at capacitating our inspectorate. Because it's not going to help that we've got good laws, but we cannot be able to enforce them. The issue of fight against unlawful activities, in particular the issue of corruption, is still something which as a department we still need to work hard on it. Improvement on administration, especially financial management issues, is still something which we are faced with it. We are still working hard on it. And so we always want to ensure that we've got staff which is properly trained, professional, and caring. Well, in terms of now what is driving our priorities and commitments for 2014, we said we need to really have effective management of immigration to contribute to security and development, including the leading of the establishment of PMA. We need to have a comprehensive and secure national identity system, as I've already alluded to. Modernize Home Affairs through investing in people, processes, and technology. Improve service delivery and promote good governance and administration. Develop officials that are ethical, patriotic, and professional, and want to be visible and firm, actually, in the fight against corruption. So what we, now in terms of the resolving these issues, we really want to finalize the review of the immigration policy. What we had was the amended and the regulations, but we have to look at the total review of the immigration policy to really deal with the issue of subject labor at migration, asylum seeker management, residence and citizenship facilitation of migrants with critical skills. We want to finalize the regulations for amendment refugee act, which was done. We want to continue with our systems modernization, IT smart card rollout, and the development of the NIS, and developing a new Home Affairs cater. In this regard, Chair, we've got Learning Academy. Yes, we've got our Learning Academy as a department, which is really established to train our officials, though we work with other institutions. And we want to develop a roadmap with concrete measures to capacitate DHA as a security department that provides efficient services and still continue the lead of the establishment of PMA and implementing our HR strategy roadmap, and still continue to check with the consultant the National Population Research Campaign program and strengthen the stakeholder forum linked to the ending of LRP. So I think we need to emphasize this one. So our law says now children must be registered within 30 days. In our amendment, we want to say to the parents, if you don't register that child within 30 days, there's going to be a penalty for not doing so. And once that child gets to an age of 1 year, it will also be stricter for you to be able to have this child registered. Because if we don't stop this issue of a late registration of birth, that's where the fraud is coming in. Because somebody comes, is already 20 years, and says, I don't have a parent, I don't have a grandparent, I don't have anything, I'm just by myself. And then in that process, that a person is fraudulently acquiring the citizenship of our country. So we'll still be, for us, we're really committed to work towards obtaining a clean audit and intensify the fight against corruption and strengthen the implementation of a communication strategy. It's something which we still really want to work hard as a department to communicate to the public to understand what are our services, how to get into these services and all that. So this is just a slide which says what are these things which we are engaged in it as a department. When it is green, it shows that we have already started those projects. And then when it is green, is in still on a conceptualization level. So the green is what we have already started, but our concept is on the yellow. It's where I was saying that we need to have a national identification system. We need to have our visa and permits. We need to have a trusted traveler and a contact center. A contact center is different to the call center which we have. The call center which we currently have is really more of a messenger type of a system. Most people never have an access into the information, but the contact center will mean that if you call that contact center, they must be able precisely where your application is, what is still outstanding, so that our customers are able to get the responses which are prompt. So then in looking at this modernization, we really want to transform DSA into a paperless environment. We want to ensure uninterrupted service delivery. We really want to guarantee system performance and security, and want to guarantee non-repudiation integrity management and the quality of service. Chair, we've already explained now what these things should be doing that I was saying in the previous slide. And also said I want to look at making sure that our refugee systems and the contact center and the biometrics, so that's what we'll be doing. And we'll do this thing through our 70 offices, and we're working together with the GPW because we're not printing these cards with the private sector. It is done by our government printing works. And so we are, as we said, and we've already printed 251 entry cards. So let me touch on this one now to say we've already now produced 423 cards. So our target, which now we've come with an errata, I think at this point I can touch that. We were planning to issue 3 million cards. However, we've reduced that number as an errata to 1.6 million. The basis was that we wanted to develop an e-channel where the citizen of this country will be able to start the process of applying at home or with whatever, where they can access the computers, those who can, and be able to make the payment through the bank and then come only to Home Affairs for a fingerprint and a photo. But we had some delays on the security part of that system, because we cannot afford that our card can be hacked. So we had to delay now that process in order for us to make sure that that process is tight. So that the 1.6 is based on the offices which we have, hence the minister has signed that. So this is already in the draft plan, I don't think I need to repeat, but rather just to indicate to the committee that as a department we've got three outcomes. It's secured South African citizenship and identity, and outcome two is secured and responsive immigration systems, and outcome three is services to citizens and other clients that are accessible and efficient. Then say in the document, all these are already in the document, categorized exactly like that in the annual performance plan. I don't think I need to repeat them because they are there in the what the department will be achieving now against each one. So we come with a strategic objective and what is the annual target. So what we say as a department will achieve in the particular target. So just to save time, I don't want to repeat what is already in the document, but just taking it now into detail. Chair, I just get a part of what is the organizational structure of the department. Chair, we've got the ministry, which is the green one, and then below that we've got missions. So our missions abroad are split as per the regions, as the DECO regions. And then at headquarters, we've got those branches. We've got 8 branches. And then we've got the audit committee. And then we've got 9 provinces which are reporting both as a Department of Home Affairs. We are not with the provinces. We are national competence. And then we've got these 3 entities. Also, we've got the Standing Committee on Refugees, which called SCRI deals with the refugees and the refugees appeals board, and we've got Immigration Advisory Board. And we are saying that as of March 2014, our vacant funded posts were 10,344, but filled 9,644, as I've indicated in the previous one. This one just explain now how is our footprint being split, which now is saying now as a department, we are split to national, so at DG and national, we are linking with the national, then at the provincial level is the provincial managers, at local, the district manager operations is responsible for district municipality, and then the heads of offices are responsible for the local and municipality. In terms of the footprint, China, we are currently have 404 offices with regard to the civic services and immigration in the provincial level. But we are additional. We have what we call mobile offices, the offices on the wheel. We've got 115 mobile, which are able to go to the communities. As I've indicated, now we have 289 hospitals which have been connected. And for refugees, we've got 3 refugee centers in Durban, Marabastad, and Musina. And then with the missions abroad, we are currently in 41 missions, and then the 103 is serviced by the Department of DECO. And then ports of entry, we've got left 72 ports of entry throughout the country, but the next map just demonstrates how many ports of entry which we have. And if you look at it, more especially if you go to Lesotho, you can see how many ports of entry we have around that. And again, if you look across, you can see the numbers which we have is something which in our as a department we are responsible for, which includes the air borders, include rail borders, and the borderline was things about 4,760 kilometers, whereas a sea is 2.8, so it's really a vast area. Chair, at this point now, I will get Josephina just to take 4 or 5 slides just on the figure side of the budget.
Thank you very much. I think she can take us on.
We'll be basically going through the budget for the past three financial years, and then the year we are currently in, which is 14-15. The department's budget is broken into three programs. Program one is administration, which includes ministry, DG's office, and corporate services. The second program is civic affairs. This includes the branch, civic services, provinces, as well as the three entities falling within the department. And then the third branch is immigration affairs. What we did in this slide was basically to outline how we spend our budget per program. If you look for the 11-12 year, we had a saving of about 202 million. The next slide outlines where that saving is. The saving comes from compensation of employees, which was about 53 million, and that was mainly due to the delays we had in filling of posts. And then goods and services, there was a saving of about 147 million. And that saving was due to the funding that we set aside for payment of unauthorized expenditure, but because various processes did not follow, the finance bill was not appropriated for us to pay those funds over. In the 12-13 financial year, we had an overspending, a technical overspending, because in this year we implemented a trading account. But due to certain administrative and audit requirements, ourselves together with Treasury delayed the implementation of the trading account. So what in actual fact happened is that we overspent on the budget, and that matter has been is with Treasury, and it has been Treasury has sent a report through to SCOPA for the finalization of this expenditure. Related mostly to goods and services in that financial year. In the year currently being audited, the 13-14 financial year, we spent 100% of our budget. There was a minor saving of just over 2 million, and that was mostly as well in goods and services, with small savings under compensation of employees. These figures are still unaudited, so it might change based on the audit outcome which we are expecting at the end of this month. The current year, which we are in, 14-15 financial year, we have a total budget of 6 billion, of which the Home Affairs alone, excluding the entities, is 4.8 billion. We are spending at 15%, and in terms of the linear projections as calculated by Treasury, we should be at 16.6, so we are slightly below the projection, but through the year it will obviously balance out. Thank you.
Thank you very much. That was very quick. That was very quick. But I'm sure it's all members, I think, are having the figures in front of them. I'm sure you still want to say something after she has presented the numbers or what?
Yes, no, Chair, just one thing, sir. We still, we still say things are savings, but what we mean by it is the unspent funds, or the savings with the definition, which is not, that's what we wanted to say. When we say that these amounts, we are saying these amounts were not spent. So in this year, where the 2.1 million was not spent. So I wanted just to do that. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. I think we just need to thank the presentations that have been made, and I'm sure many of us now we are finding the footing. What is this department all about? What it is currently doing, and what it intends to do for the next 12 months. That is what is all about, the plan. And now we know what they are going to do, and also the financial resources that have been budgeted for to be able to realize the plan that has been outlined in front of us. Now I want to call upon members. Is there anything on the two presentations that we have received from the department on the budget as well as the APP, their plan, that we need further clarification?
that is the two documents that have been presented are the two documents that are going to form the basis of our deliberations and the conclusion that we agree with the department that whether they will be able to do the work with the kind of resources that has been made available to them. That's going to be the base of our discussions. So it is important that you must get clarity, especially on numbers, the intentions, and so that we are clear when we discuss this and then we discuss as being informed. Honorable members.
Chair, I take it this is your invitation to ask any questions you want from the department on the issues to hand. Let me say firstly, Chair, that I think that this is very clearly a department that has made some great strides over the years and has had very good progresses in terms of innovation. But of course, with the innovation comes various problems that I think that you will deal with as the years go by. The first question that I want to raise with you is the issue of the birth registry, the online birth registry. And I know that this is something new that has been introduced over a period of time at all of the hospitals, allowing people to register newborn children. And so the question I want to ask is all of the health institutions in the country covered? And how many of them don't have this online birth registry system? And then you mentioned that you're thinking of introducing a penalty for parents who don't register their children at those hospitals. Do you not think that would have the opposite effect instead of encouraging them to register? I mean, I recognize that it is a problem, but I'm not sure that imposing penalties is actually going to achieve the kind of outcome that you want, especially if you don't have it at all of the hospitals across the country. Chair, the second one is with regards to the comment that was made around the porousness of our borders, and I appreciate the recognition of that. I wonder whether the department has any figures available or can just paint a picture in terms of whether or not the number of foreigners in South Africa have been on the increase or on the decrease based on the work that has been done by the inspectors. I'm encouraged to hear that you say that we need to capacitate the inspectorate division, because there's no point in building stronger borders if you don't have a stronger inspectorate, because the both of them go hand in hand. On the smart cards, Chair, I would just want to ask, and I'm not sure whether this is a fair question to ask now, but I'll ask it anyway. How long do you think it would take for the department to roll out the IDs, the smart IDs, in its entirety? In other words, how long will it take for all South Africans to have a smart ID? Is it going to be in about 2 years or so, or longer? Chair, I want to just come now to the issue of the immigration and the VFS and the new system that was introduced, and you mentioned it in your presentation. And I just want to say this, that I don't think any one of us disagree in the country that we need to make sure that the security of our systems is paramount. Nobody disagrees with that. But I'm not so sure that the department has been ready for these regulations and the impact of it. I mean, I know just recently, very recently, possibly on Friday or so, that the High Court had already ruled that the undesirable status of some people have been, the department's been forced to lift it. I'm not sure whether you've seen that the ruling of the court yet. But clearly there are a number of people.
A little bit, Honorable Hussein. I thought that you were going to finish quicker and I did not need to intervene.
How much of time?
I just wanted to bring this specific item. I think I raised it. Is that we ask questions of clarity on what has been reported. And all the questions of clarity, we must avoid discussing, because when we have to come to the deliberations, then that time will come. At the moment, it's points of clarity. When they said,
189 hospitals are connected online, then they should confirm that. They should confirm that. And that's the information they are giving us. And then, you see, we must avoid discussing for them to clarify, I mean, to discuss whether it's appropriate, not appropriate, whether we'll be able to roll the smart ID cards, and how many years are we going to take. When they say in the strategic plan, for the coming year, 1.6, we planned 3 million. Now we have reviewed that because of certain logistical arrangements. Then this is what you must clarify. Is it 1.6? And then that you are saying, and then they clarify that. I think we should start at that particular point of asking questions of clarity. And then we can find time on ourselves. Like as we're saying that next week, it is the day that ourselves now we are going to actually look at this thing, discuss, deliberate, and resolve on things that we must direct them. If we are convinced that the 1.6 million is not right, then we will say what we want to say. And then on our deliberations and our report will capture all of that. But just simply fighting with them on the 1.6 or not the 1.6, it's not appropriate now. It's just simply for them to clarify 1.6 million and why are you saying 1.6? So that it must fit in your future discussion and what you think it should be appropriate. So that's what I just wanted to get us moving that specific direction. Points of clarity and discussions are two different things.
May I continue? Chair, with respect to you, sir, it is not I who raised this in this department. It's the department itself that brought the information here on this presentation. Now, you have opened up an opportunity for us to discuss this presentation. Now, but no, you must let me finish now. So it's the department that put it out there, and I'm questioning them on their presentation. I'm not bringing anything new here. And you asked us to ask questions of clarity, and that's exactly what I'm doing. So if the department will respond, then I'll get the clarity. So I don't understand what is it that you are interjecting about. I mean, you've invited me to ask questions, I'm doing so. And I ask that you allow the department to respond. With your permission, may I continue?
Now, Honorable Hussein, I'm sure we don't need to debate on this particular matter. All what I'm saying is the department has presented its plan. Now, on the issues that they have told us that they will do and they are aiming for, get more clarity on those issues. And discussion is a separate activity. We will actually find ourselves in difficult positions if we are not able to separate the point of clarity and discussion. Then we're going to find ourselves mixing issues together. It will be unfortunate if, Honorable Hussein, you are not able to differentiate a discussion and a point of clarity. But if you are able to do so, then you will assist all of us to actually move forward on the points of clarity, and then so that you are able to be informed by this department on the things that they want to do. But I would be comfortable if I get to a position that says you are not able to separate it. Then I'll pardon, and then for you to continue in the manner you are continuing. And then, but those that are able to separate the two, then they should do so that they actually save us a lot of time of discussing things that we're not supposed to discuss at the moment. And we need to actually get more clarity on the plan that they are putting up. If you have not understood something clearly, that's the point of clarity that we talk about. If they have gone past quite quickly on a certain particular element and they did not understand correctly, those are the issues that we are actually calling. So that we are on par, all of us now, with enough and correct knowledge, so that when we discuss them, we are able to understand each other. Thank you very much.
Chair, I completely understand the point you're making. I don't misunderstand it.
get all that information. So, I mean, I'm engaging with the department to ask them questions to follow up on the presentation that they've put. Or else I can just sit at home and read the document and get all the information that you're asking me to clear my mind about.
So are you saying you should get to the next one, and then you'll get a point of clarity, you'll clarify yourself by reading the document, and then you can get those that there are issues that they still need the department to clarify.
Chair, my point is this.
You have got the capacity to clarify.
My point is this, is that I would like to engage the department on the presentation they put on the screen. And you went to the sixth manner in which I asked the question, and I'm saying that's not fair.
Let's finish the point of clarity.
May I proceed?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Mr. Chair, I still have a question that I would like to ask.
May you continue?
Thank you, sir. I want to just ask the question on this dashboard, the HR dashboard on your document. Please, DG, if we can just go there and that document itself. This one is a very straightforward question. The last column, 2013-14, says 48038. Is that, what is that, 1,000? I think, I don't know, the pages are not numbered. I'm sorry. Estimated cost of sick leave taken. Is that days or figures or is that an amount or is that days? It doesn't specify this.
increases constantly and at a reasonable percentage. Would you mind to take the committee into confidence as to what happened in the funding of your first entity, which declined by 7% on a certain year and jumped by 107% over the after years? And what is that status going to continue in the after years as at over 800 million rand increase? One would understandably agree that probably maybe there were elections in 2011, hence it jumped maybe, which year was that? It was elections 2011 of local government elections. Maybe it should have been high. But 2012 there were no elections. 2013 there were no elections, or maybe they were preparing for the 2014 elections, we don't know, but the rate of increase of the budget leaves much to be desired, considering the trust that is attached to that institution on financial mismanagement. A second clarity question I would like to ask is, you made a presentation on your annual performance plan of the Department of Home Affairs, spoke about the current department responsible for status, identity and status of citizens. Well said. To which extent maybe do we have a rapid response unit to deal with the horrors that we hear about you? Maybe you should have put it in your annual performance plan. You watch ENCA every day. A 32-year-old girl has got 9 children. I don't say she must access the grant, but apparently one of the issues is her identity book says she is a maid. And accordingly, the 9 children can't get a grant, a social, a child support grant. Do you have maybe a rapid response unit that you intend to just concentrate on red flags so that maybe you don't have a column in one media house called Department of Horrors? Like, I know of a media house that has dedicated a page daily on Home Affairs. The last question, Chairperson, is a clarity-seeking question. You say the department is also responsible for management. There's a chief directorate on immigration. And to which extent, Jefferson, is it possible that briefly we are privileged because we are a new parliament, the first parliament, just briefly, maybe if it's possible, between 5 to 10 minutes, we're taken on board so that we can defend the department. Why are you so much under attack on the immigration regulations that have just been published? Because after this meeting, when I get out, I'm going to receive a media call, media inquiry. What is the position of the economic freedom fighters on the immigration rules that have just been published? How should I defend this department on those rules and regulations that have been published? Or I should say, no, EFF is still studying. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, yes, Honorable Ngo.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would like to thank the DG and his team for the presentation. And I do take note of a few areas which the DG took us through, and that is the key challenges which they are faced with. I think he actually read about 9 of them. And I would like to request that we take note of the issue that we will still be doing quite a lot of oversight over some of these areas. As a result, I won't go into detail with some of them, but I would like to then get on to my second point, which are the strategic initiatives. I'm not sure what page it is, but there are about 11. There's an area here where the DG kept on repeating to finalize the review, to finalize the regulations, to develop, to implement. Can we get a time frame of when exactly all of that is going to happen? Because, you know, he's seeking to finalize something that could take ages. My third point is on, again, the strategic initiative where you've got 2 in brackets there. There's this issue, number 9, where the DG mentioned to work towards obtaining a clean audit. What type of an audit was received before? Or probably through these 3 years that we're talking about, especially 2012, 2013, what did the Auditor General state on the audit? Because then it borders around why the department is looking towards obtaining a clean audit. Lastly, on the budget, I'm not too sure what to take Chairperson as the finality on this matter, because the DG was quite correct when he went on to explain the matter of underspending. I think we're all aware of that. We're all aware of the the financial acts pertaining to that. But I would like us to take note of what is written here. You see, on page 4, we have a note at the bottom which says the savings in compensation of employees is as a result of the late filling of posts. So what do we say pertaining to what was stated by Madame Day and what the DG actually stated when he was addressing the matter of underspending? What do we take here? Because then it means that we have been given information that may... That is incorrect. Because here we're talking about 2 things. Because when we talk about the savings, we're talking about being given 10 rand to go and buy a particular item. And you buy the item for 7 rands and you come out with 3 rands. That's a savings. But in this regard, we're talking in terms of something else different. Even the second one, the savings under goods and services, is due to the funding being set aside for the payment of unauthorized expenditure. Knowing the rules of finance, unauthorized expenditure is something else. You cannot put it as a savings. So, Chairperson, I can go on and on. With the second page, the over expenditure is due to the non-implementation of the trading account. Again, it is not a savings, as the DG has also alluded. And we can go on and on and on. Now, I would just like to make a request, Chairperson, through you, that we come to an understanding of exactly what will be coming down as areas on the note pertaining to the savings and pertaining to the underspending statement, noting everything on the Public Finance Management Act, on underspending, on fruitless expenditure, on everything else, on savings and everything else. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the presentation. My first question will be on the issue of budget. What changes are needed? Are they needed to ensure that the underspending does not occur? What are the underspending? And then, secondly, how many posts that remain unfunded in DG? And thirdly, to what extent that have capturing and biometrics standing been implemented in our offices and port of entries because that is a problem when you talk about the immigrants, so you talk about the pensions. Social development has got a problem where you find that people come to the country, especially at Mpumalanga, where there is the end of Swaziland, for example, and Mozambique. Yeah, some of the people are coming there. They come to take the grants, and some of them come to get the SRDs, the social relief distress, and then they go back and come back again, and change the names. On that issue, and what extent you capturing of the biometric scanning being implemented in our offices of the Port of Entries. Then thirdly and lastly, on page 15, bullet 2, you talked about the exit management and retention strategies. Just to check if you've got any recruitment strategy there. I understand that you have got the retention and also the exit. On the outcome 3, lastly, page 39, you talked about your zero tolerance approach to crime, fraud and corruption. I'm worried now, maybe that also relates to international relations. I wonder about the crime committed by some of the foreigners, and then they get away and go back to their countries. What should it is, as much as I know that in the secondary, at least it's not one of your social protection is not really under KC, but because you are also concerned about the ports of entry. What is your strategy? Therefore, what do you do? Because when they are getting space, they go back to their countries and never come back. And then they have been arrested. But when they get the bail, they go back. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Thank you very much. I've been covered for today's, but for one question. The question of reduction in overall budget. What is your impact analysis, particularly around provinces? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Tula.
Thank you, the DG, with such an excellent presentation. I just wanted to ask, in relation to the compulsory registration of birth, and the DG also said that, you know, refugees, the border, the refugees must be next to the center of the borders. But we have seen women coming from across the border, coming fully pregnant, and coming to deliver in the inner cities. So how are we going to control, women who are fully pregnant? And then the children, how are they going to be registered?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to the presenter. I thought maybe this question was going to be touched, but I have to ask it. The unabridged certificate, how long, what is the period to wait for the unabridged certificate? And then the issue of smart cards, smart ID cards for the 16-year. When did it start? Because I had so many questions from last year already. 16-year children went to apply for IDs. They've got the green barcoded ID, not the smart card. And then also the question about the training of staff. How long does the training take to train the staff to do the smart ID? Because we've got a problem, especially in Khayelitsha and Nyanga East, where people don't understand about their smart card. Thank you.
Thank you.
out of that, we're estimating that 38 million are already having identity documents. And then from that, every year, which is a 16-year-old, we estimate that 1.2, remember I said there's about 1.2 children born per year. It is equal now that they will also turn 16, whether they will be less than that number, at a range of a million. So again, the strategy is that we are looking at a period of 5 to 6 years or 7 to complete that exercise. Hence now we are starting with our offices, we are coming with these other interventions like your e-channel, so that the sooner we push that number, the better for the security of the state. But we've got the estimated period. On this issue of the visa, I think this VFS and the visa, we won't be doing justice to take a 2 million and explain something which looks like it is complex. We will appreciate, Chair, if the committee can invite the department, because also, I think we tried to explain it and say this is what happened in the 2013-14 financial year. It's not 14, 15, we're not looking forward. It's something which has already been done. But I think it is fair, as the committee members saying, that they need to understand what was the rationale for the amendment, because those were processed through Parliament. So I need to come and say, this is what was the in the Act before it was amended. This was the rationale to amend the Act. This is what we wanted to achieve with the Act. Because if we don't do that, Chair, I'm going to again make committees to get something which is not proper. Like now to say, if I make the example of 1,250 and say it's the state paying, but if I do that presentation, I'll be able to say that it's not paid by the state. So, Chair, that's what I think, that in that one, if the members agree, it will help us to do it in that way, because it's a complex process on the VFS and the regulations. So it means that China, even this issue of saying, is it private company taking the work of Home Affairs? It's not. But in the presentation, it will be clear what how are we doing it. And the visa amount estimate will also come in at that. So now on the issue of the why, I think the honourable members responded on the questions to say why the money has been increased. It's based on elections. If you look at that, it's the funding of the entity based on elections. So if now there was an election on this particular year, it will increase. So that is basically, it was for local and it is also for national. And you are correct that if the elections are on the 7th of May, you can't spend the money from April up to the 7th. You won't be able to do it. They spend the money in the previous financial year, and then in the year of election, it's just to implement what you already have. Secondly, there was the money for political parties was not with the Home Affairs before. It was with the Department of Justice. And then it was transferred back to us. That's why now there was also that. So the IEC budget in the 2011-12 was 839 million. And then in the 2012-13 was 762 million. And then in the 2013-14 was 1.579 billion. So it is based on that. So that's why there are those. Let me deal with the issue of Home Affairs being a horror department. Shall we accept as a department our inefficiencies? That's why we are constantly looking at how we can improve that. That's why, Chair, we are saying Home Affairs, when it was a horror affairs, we were issuing an ID at 180 days. And when we're horror affairs, we're on paper. What makes what the honourable is saying? If now you've got the applying an ID on a paper, you take a photo,
it with a paper tip. And then after these papers, there are a bunch of 100. They fall down. What that official does, he just takes this food and thing by his look like this and put it on this and all that. That will happen. That's why the Department of Home Affairs must automate. There is no way that in a smart card you can get a situation that now your photo is swapped with somebody else, your fingerprint is swapped with whatever. Yes, in the past, we were like that. But now, going forward, that's where we are. Even if you read those stories, I don't know how many, comparing them, that Home Affairs deals with all those 52 million citizens. We're not dealing with a sector of the citizens. We deal with all of them. But the answer is not on the paper. You will never get it right. Your answer is on IT modernization. That's why the banks cannot have your bank account swapped with the other, because it's the system. But if it was people writing the bank account number by pen, we're in trouble. So that's why you know Home Affairs is moving in that direction, so that we make sure that we don't take a male child and make it a female. Because the system, you are there, you are taking my picture electronically. And also, that's why we're saying that you don't write in a pen. You are sitting in front of that computer, you type, and then I can look at what you are typing. Before I press a button, I go to that person and say, is this your name? I'm sure the members who have not yet gone to apply for the smart card, we will do so to make sure that they go and look at our smart chair. We have to continue to improve. So as a Department of Health Affairs, we're accepting our challenges. We're not running away from them. The only way we deal with them is to say, I'm not going to go and fight with that paper and say, why are you saying Home Affairs is a horror affairs? The only thing I must do, what must I change in order that does not happen? Chair, I think the issue that I've responded on this issue to say, yes, the department has been under attack in all of us. Chair, we'll come back and report on that. But the lessons which we have learned, Chair, I remember when the Department of Health came with the regulations that no people must smoke in the public. It was under severe attack. But today, all of us were enjoying. So the new immigration regulations, we are going to be under attack. We knew about that. But we are doing this in the best interest of the state. And after our presentation, which we have done to the members, as the Honorable Member said, that I want to go and be able to say why the department has done that, I'm sure we'll achieve that. But it will come back. So let me deal with the issue now of the time frames. So in the report, while I'm reporting it, I'm taking, but we thought that the members, if I wanted to check what was that page, if you go to page 53, we put this thing in quarters. Page, starting from page 50. So now we've got each section per branch. So if, for instance, now, Chair, I can go just to the one, border management agents on page 53. It will tell and say, now, what we'll be doing in 2014-15, what we'll be doing in 2015-16, then it splits it according to that. And then there's another one where we split it even per quarter. Where is the one with the quarter? Then I want current financial year quarters. Yes. Then if you go to page 55, then now we take that target, which is annual, and we script it per quarter. So now quarter one, it means April to June. This is what we'll do. Quarter two, June to July. Quarter three, July. So that now we're able to manage it. Because if you just put it as global, then we're not able to look at it. So that's what we have done. I don't know where is that one of the cards now, on which page, as an example.
take. For us, I can take to another one. When we say on page 37, we say chair will be doing 70 offices. If you look at page 37, it says now out of that 70, 40 offices will be done in quarter two. And then 20 offices will be done in third quarter. 10 offices will be done in the last quarter. So it's broken down into time frames. So that's what Chair wanted to do. So we have done that. Then Chair, in the issue of the... Let me explain this. I think it's a language which we're dealing with it. That's why I explain it to say, normally when we explain savings, we explain it the same thing as unspent. But we know that a savings is when, as the honorable member was saying, I wanted to buy something which is 100 rand, but I managed to get it at 80 rand, therefore there is a saving of 20. That's why I was explaining after she presented to say, we are trying to say, when we said savings, we should have just used the word unspent, because that money was not. That's why I corrected immediately after he has presented, so that now the members can understand that this is what we are meaning. So all those figures means that. Chair, we have raised it as a challenge that the Department of Home Affairs has been sitting with problems around the issues of audit. So in the previous years, as the member has indicated, we were sitting with a qualified audit report. That's why we're saying we're working hard to get into a level of an unqualified audit report. That's what we mean. I think I've given all the time frames for the honorable member. So I'm skipping other questions because other colleagues are going to deal with it. Chair, the issue of how we will reduce the under spending. Chair, if you look at those figures, that's why we said we did not underspend the budget in the 2012-13. That's why it shows that it was like it was an over expenditure, but we're saying it was because the money which we're going to get it for, the trading account was not transferred within that year. If you come to the following year, which is this year, which is audited, it's only 2.1 million which was left. And in terms of the PFMA, they give a percentage to say a department is about 8%, which is allowed. Because, yes, we want to spend everything up to the last cent, but there are processes which other things take long, but that bracket is allowed. But if you take it in terms of, it's a 0.01%. So we are working as a department. We don't have a lot of monies which are not spent. The question of how many posts not funded, we've indicated in other slides that the total structure of the Department of Home Affairs as a structure, but that's why we said we don't want to work on the unfunded position because you are given money as Treasury is able to allocate money to you. That's why we concentrate on the positions which are funded, which was saying there were 10,000, and then out of that 10,344, so much were filled. So that's what we want to look at it. So everyone will deal with the issue of the recruitment strategy. This issue of people getting a bail and come back to the country. That's why I was saying if there's a cluster of departments, we said our systems have to be linked. So the horrible stories at times which we get, that somebody get arrested, get inside the cell. When he's in the cell, comes to this one and says, look, for me, though I was arrested for murder, but this one was arrested for drunken driving. And then I says, look, me, I'm drunken driving. You are a murderer. And when they go tomorrow, if there were no fingerprints taken, how are we going to know that? And then the one who was a murderer gets a bail because at that point he checks into this one and say, I am a drunken driver, you are a murderer. And
and then the one is the one now who gets appealed, and then you go through the process of the case, go to the crime scene, and find that it was not this person, get released. But once now we're working together and say, at a point of getting arrest, you take a fingerprint. The new smart card has got your fingerprints now in the chip. So as you call now, you take this smart card, I put it on the system and say, put your finger. Then I will know, but I am dealing with this person. But if as a country, we don't get into this mode of a fingerprint, let's forget about it. So people will cross the border because I didn't take a fingerprint. Tomorrow, that person comes back. Now his Mavuso is no longer a plane. How I want to know it? But if I took a fingerprint, so you can change your name many a times, but the fingerprint is going to say it is you, nobody else. So we do that. We release them. We send them. We deport at a cost. Because we not just we send them free. I have to take them in a plane and go take them back. I have to take them on the rail, and then they cross. 2 days' time, they're back. But now, once we implement these systems, that is not going to happen. So that's what. So it is a fact. It's what is happening, but that's what we're looking at. So the issue of the reduction of the budget, I think it's important to say, well, National Treasurer will come to us looking at the economy of the country and say we'll cut a budget by 2%. It's not happening to the Department of Home Affairs. It is in the country as a whole. Yes, the impact is there in terms of what we want to grow to be. But I think with the resources also which we have, is what we are saying, if we can utilize them effectively and efficiently, they will make some progress. Yes, as a Department of Home Affairs, probably if I can get an increase of $1 billion, it will make us to be somewhere. That's why, Chair, we need to come with innovative ways. If we think that it's only the fiscals which will be able to, but we can't think creatively. Though I don't want to get into the VFS issue now, whether it was one of those creative ways. That's why we're talking about the e-channel, because now with the e-channel is another creative way to supplement what we have. But there is no way that the economy of this country at the present moment will be able to take all that. So provinces have been increasing their budgets in the last 3 years. In 2011-12, it was 1.4 billion. Now in 2012-13, was 1.5. Now is at 1.8 billion. So, Chair, we'll also make a more analysis in terms of how even the staff has increased on those. So, Mr. Mkhize, the realization of beds in the country, I leave it to you, Green ID book. Chair, let me go to the 16-year-old. It's a fact, Chair. What happened is that we've got 70 offices first across the country. If now we would have taken a decision to say no 16-year-old must apply for a green ID book, we'll put hardship to those kids because not all the offices across the country are already ready. We've got 403 offices, as I, 404 as I indicated, but out of that we've got 70 last year, we'll be having 70. So at the time where we think that we have got enough geographical spread in the country, then we can stop it. Because if we do it before that, a child who's in another area, he won't have an ID book, but he has to write a matric. So he has to apply. But in the offices now where we've got offices now with the smart card, we want now the offices to not allow any child who is in the office where there is a new system to apply for the green book. That must not happen. So that is the basis for that. Training staff is something which we really, when we go to offices, we call them back, we went back, we assist, we look, because the more they are efficient is where it will help us. I think we have indicated now the issue of what our time frames are. Let me come to this issue of the social grant, which is a really good point. We're going to come to this unabridged birth certificate. What is the difference between abridged birth certificate and unabridged? The abridged which we had before, it was only taking the kid's details. But the unabridged says, I want the details of the mother, the details of the father. I want the ID number of the parents in the birth certificate. If I'm not married, but as a father, I agree to the paternity, my name will also be in the unabridged birth certificate. What is the purpose for that? NSFAS was saying to us, a lot of kids who are in that funding, they go there and say, no, my father is somebody who's not working in the rural area, and just come and get that bursary. But if they had an unabridged birth certificate, because now my ID number as a plane is in my unabridged birth certificate, let us take that unabridged birth certificate, put it on the system, go to PESAL and find out, no man, but this father of yours is working for government. That's why the answer is on unabridged birth certificate. To say we must enforce people to have unabridged birth certificate. Therefore, that cannot happen. Because now if I'm getting the grant, whoever is getting this social grant, but I am working, then the systems are going to be able to pick that thing up. So that's why now we are saying it's still an issue should come back. When we say, you can't travel with a child without an unabridged birth certificate. Because now we want that child to have his or her own passport, and the new I'm traveling with this child, my name must appear there. And then I've got my own ID number, I can be checked that I am responsible for this child. I'm not trafficking children. As good as I'm not claiming things which I cannot. So with the social development, that's what we want to go. Once as a result now, we don't issue this abridged birth certificate. You get an abridged birth certificate on the spot in the hospitals. So that's why you get, our hospitals are exactly like that. You go to the hospital, you get your unabridged them. Let's also explain this issue to say, it is not meaning that you cannot go and apply in the offices of Home Affairs. That's why I want to deal with that issue to say it will work it negatively. In that mobile office, you can apply for the birth certificate. In the hospital, you can apply for a birth certificate. In the offices of Home Affairs, you can apply for a birth certificate. So if we leave the communities to say, no, don't, you can still sit for 5 years without a birth certificate, we are not helping the country. That's why I was saying, if we can, which we will do, if now we can count how much amount will be saved by states by making sure that the systems of Home Affairs are tight, is beyond count. So that's where we are. So
just a little bit. As I have said at the beginning of the meeting, I needed to depart now, straight away now, for the challenges that I reported back at the beginning. Now, I wanted to request the membership that I want to propose that Honorable Gumed to relieve me and just finish the remaining part of the meeting. And that's what I just wanted to request the member. Is it agreed? Thank you very much for agreeing on that. And Honorable Nkong.
Chairperson, I think before we excuse you, I think it's the challenge which you explained to us in the morning, which you are going to. We would like, on behalf of the committee,
just to express our sympathy towards the passing of your mother, because we did not do that initially at the meeting, and we do know that God will be with you. Thank you.
Of course, then Mr. Gumede then will come and leave me straight away now. I hope that you're not going to have the whole afternoon meeting, because we're still coming back next week and for serious discussions on these matters and finally produce the report. I'm just happy that almost half of the report is already up. We'll finish up next week. And congratulations for you to come and leave me.
Excluding clinics that have got the high rate of births,
and that database then assists us to categorize hospitals according to priority one, where you've got about 2,000 to 3,000 cells per year, and then we categorize them like that. So these 389 hospitals we are referring to are mainly those where there is high volume of beds, not all of them, because in the country, if we included clinics, we would have about 4,000. And therefore, then the main hospitals, we just had about less than 1,000 that they provided to us, which are main hospitals with high volumes of beds. However, this spread is done also to look at the issue of rural areas vis-a-vis urban areas. We needed to make sure that we cover this spread. Our analysis was the people who are traveling from far are mainly those from rural areas. And if we cannot make them have access to birth registration, we will not eliminate the late registration of birth. So the strategy is having priority one hospitals, two and three, and based on the number of births. But we also have included here the private hospitals, because most of them do also have facilities that they provided to us to register births. So the number is still high if we were to look at how many of them. But the main thing is catch as many as possible. The rest we then service using the mobile offices, which also issue the birth certificate on the spot. So we service them also using the mobile offices, particularly in the rural areas. The penalties, are they an incentive or a disincentive? The answer is that firstly, the intention is to avoid even having to get to the penalty. The intention is to make sure that as citizens, we become consciously responsive and responsible to register births without being forced to. So the penalties are meant to be a deterrent, because 30 days is quite a long time for you not to register births. In fact, it is criminal for a child to be born when it's unknown that it's born. Because then that child cannot even get any services of government, even when it's in need of that. So the incentive, it should serve more as an incentive rather than as a disincentive. And the reason why it's not yet implemented was only based on the fact that you needed to get the permission with engaged with National Treasury. So it's not yet activated, Honorable Chair. It's just that it is what we'll communicate first, to make sure people understand it, so that when it gets affected, people would have understood that it's not about them going underground, more than them are registering births immediately. And that is why the efforts are being made to make accessibility easy. So, for some, it might sound like a disincentive. It's possible that they might feel like that, but we are hoping that we'll catch them before there is a need for penalties. And then the issue around the Director General touched on the issue of whether the issues we are facing as a department do we have a rapid response. We do have a rapid response. We do have people who are, when we receive those queries and those challenges, we then respond and we fast track and track what went wrong. I just need to indicate some of the measures put in place was in all offices, all our cell numbers are in the offices, being the DDGs and the Director General, so that a client while he's in office can raise a concern rather than to leave the office and complain later or go to the media. But also we introduce what we call a triplicate form. That triplicate form assists us to eliminate whose error is it. So we address an error knowing was it caused by the department for wrongful capture, or was it when the client was applying made the wrong entry, because that created a problem between who pays for correcting the error. So now we have introduced what we call triplicate forms, and which means will help us to minimize those risks, because that 36-year-old or 32-year-old you will find applied long time ago and then was captured wrongly. And we are dealing here with correcting all those things that were wrong in the past as a department. And to eradicate it is not easy. So if your agenda were also embarked on public education to explain the ID number, because people didn't understand the ID number itself, how is it configured? So we explain when you get your birth certificate on the spot or within 7 days, you must then check whether the seventh digit is correct in terms of gender. Is it a zero? If I'm a female, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4. But if it is not, then you know that my ID is wrong because I am a female, but it starts with a 5, the fifth gender, and the seventh digit. So we're trying to do that public education so that errors are corrected rather on the spot, or people are given 7 days before the system can require you to do things differently. So there are repeat response mechanisms to try and address those, but the intention is to be preventative rather than reactive and corrective. The last issue that you already must address was in relation to the, I think we must emphasize the 16-year-olds by emphasizing that firstly, the ID book remains a valid, legitimate form of identification. It is a legal document. And therefore, the issue of the smart ID card is a phased-in approach, a process, which will require that we reach out and capacitate as many offices as possible before all 16-year-olds can stop applying and getting a green barcode ID book. So depending on the area and vicinity where you stay, accessibility then of a smart ID card is possible. The intention is that young people should not come back again to apply for a card if by the time they apply for a card in Polokwane, they are able to get the smart card because they are within Polokwane or they are within Harrison office in Johannesburg or they are within Mthatha area in Eastern Cape. They should be able to get a card. But if you're living in a flat-flung area, it is not possible. Yet when they have to write matric exams, they will require that green ID book. And that is why then we couldn't say for 16-year-olds, only the smart ID card is a legitimate form of identification. The green barcode book remains that. Then the issue of the women from foreign countries coming to give birth in the hospitals. We must deal with two issues. One is the issue of maybe if it's fraudulent activities. In the past, we were not able to identify people who were involved in fraudulent registrations of birth. The department then introduced what we call a biometric access system, a BAM, that assists us to trace who entered birth of a foreigner on a system. We can do that now. That becomes a deterrent because it's not easy to fraud the system. Then you've got people who will come and misrepresent themselves, either as South Africans, when they are not. And our officials need to be able to ask if there are requirements, whether it's an ID or a green barcode book. So if it happens that someone is a foreign national, but tries to get the documents of South Africa, firstly, you must start with the source of the problem. Who was involved in that? And in the past, there was no audit trail. Now we're able to do it. But finally, that then all births must be registered, but we do not register them on the National Population Register. But we must know who gave birth in the country. Because if we don't have that, we will have a problem later. So that is why then we issue what we call a handwritten certificate for record purposes. So we must separate whether they are being registered on the population register or not. And because sometimes there is that confusion that then they automatically become citizens. It is not true. There are only four categories of how you become a citizen in the country. And by birth is no longer an applicable issue. It's more about by birth if one of your parents is a citizen, but not by birth in terms of locality. So there is that misunderstanding with people that they would like to make that confusion. Then the other one is by descent or by naturalization. So there are those categories that we have on how you become a citizen. So when they get a document, Honorable Chair, that is just a recognition that a birth occurred, it enables those foreign nationals to go and register in their country their child who has been born in South Africa, not because they are entered. Therefore, they are not given the ID number. So, I think I will stop there for today in terms of what was provided for me. Thanks very much, Justice General.
Okay, not much time today. Okay, let's go on.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. With regards to the question on whether the exit strategy is actually supported by the recruitment strategy, we want to say yes, definitely it does, because the approach we use is to ensure that we identify very early in the process posts that have indeed been vacated, and we encourage line them to ensure that we advertise or expedite quickly. But linked back to that, we also have a stretch target. Within the public service, you have 12 months in which to fill a post. Ours is sitting at 6 months, and on average we are filling posts between 8 and 10 months. In fact, in the last financial year, we had reduced it even to less, at about 5 months. We also use some sound project management principles, and we also have trained line on all the standard operating procedures to actually support the whole recruitment process. But the, from an exit perspective, we also conduct exit interviews. If there are any negatives that come through on that, we bring it back into our recruitment interventions. And we have a recruitment strategy that looks at quite a number of elements. We've reviewed our recruitment policy. We've also reviewed our delegations of authority, because they have a huge impact on the turnaround time for recruitment. We've now devolved it down towards a level where line are more empowered, from a level 8 down. They're actually able to conduct all their own recruitment. We've also ensured that the standard operating procedures have been reviewed to ensure that we have greater efficiency. And we've also, from an attractions perspective in recruitment, looked at how we can target specific talent, especially at the leadership level. So we make sure that the two do actually speak to each other.
Thank you. I think that should be all. Eh? Every question has been addressed properly, adequately, right? Let us then adjourn with these words. I think from Parliament, we may scrutinize your input. We may ask difficult questions, but it is for the sake of building our country to be a better country. And we do appreciate your efforts, but it is our duty to make sure that indeed the value for money is achieved. It is our duty as members of Parliament to do so. And we appreciate it if perhaps from your side we see that you are working smart and for the purpose. There shall always be challenges, there shall always be difficulties, but it is our duty to ask questions on behalf of the nation out there. Thank you for your presentation, and thank you to each and every member for upholding your duties. Thank you. I hereby adjourn this meeting.
there's another missing one. Okay, sorry. Thank you.